This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Carolyn Durden had a very successful career in Washington, D.C. She was Senate counsel on nuclear issues. She was making a very good living, moving in exclusive circles. She also felt she was making a difference, doing good work. Then she got a phone call. Her mother had had a heart attack. She threw some things into a suitcase and raced home to Tennessee and found her mother in the ICU. Despite her condition, she grabbed her daughter's arm and told her firmly, "Somebody's got to help your father." Here's how Carolyn tells what happens next. Daddy was a solo family practitioner. He had a full-time nurse, but Mama was his receptionist, bookkeeper, backup nurse, lab technician, and jack-of-all-trades sidekick. They'd worked together in his small rural office for my whole life. For someone who was officially certified to be at death's door, she gripped my wrist with surprising strength. "You've got to fill in for me for a couple of days," she said, "just till the week's out. I'll be back on Monday." Well, listeners, you can guess at this point that it's going to be more than a couple of days. Carolyn Durden writes about her love for her parents, her father's practice of medicine, and the people of rural eastern Tennessee in her memoir, Heart in the Right Place. She tells the story of how she came to see that a lot of the most important things don't look like much, and that by intervening in one another's traumas, lives can be transformed. Carolyn Durden is my guest in this portion of the program. Carolyn, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Hi, Celeste. Thanks for having me.
Sure, my pleasure. Tell us about the fellow who told you that a lot of the most important things don't look like much and that they're often downright invisible.
That was a friend of mine from childhood who was the world's greatest rock thrower. Even as a little boy, he could say, "Which nut do you want me to knock off the tree?" And he could pick up a gravel and knock off, you know, whichever nut y'all agreed on. And he went on to be a perfusionist in one of the hospitals in Knoxville and insisted that now that I was going to be a medical professional that I had to go watch him do an open heart surgery.
Yeah. What was that like?
I'm incredibly squeamish, and that was been one of the problems forever, me trying to work in the office. You know, if anything goes wrong, I, you know, pretty much get hysterical. So my father was stuck. You know, he couldn't work with me, and he couldn't work without me. So I was trying to get over squeamishness, and I let my friend take me to this big operation and to see if it would help, but it didn't.
Mm. Well, tell us about that practical advice your mom and dad gave you about fainting.
Oh, gosh, you know, I'm just famous in the whole community for my spectacular fainting. And so ever since I've been a child, my parents have been trying to teach me what to keep in mind during that last moment, you know, right before you keel over, because there is a moment where you know you're going.
You're going.
And so they always said, you know, don't fall toward the patient, fall away from the patient, and don't grab anything on the way down. Don't touch the tray. Don't touch the sterile instruments. Don't touch anything sharp. You know, there's knives all everywhere. Don't fall on the knives.
Yeah. Well, early in the book, you tell a story about growing up around your dad's practice, and you're helping him with sutures, and he's making the stitches, and you've got a Tootsie Roll in one hand, and you've got a little scissors in the other. And, you know, you're barely tall enough to see what's going on, but eventually that changed. So why do you suppose you were so squeamish? And at the outset of the story, it seems like, oh, you're used to all this kind of thing.
I don't know what happened. As a little kid, I think, you know, they're pretty tough and sort of cruel, really, and have no, you know, empathy or compassion about anything going on. And so if my dad would get me one of those great big Tootsie Rolls, they used to cost a nickel.
Yeah.
He would let me stand on the rolling stool that all the doctors used to have in their offices, and I'd stand on that stool and help cut the stitches in between every time, you know, he'd sewed one and tied a knot in it. And if it was...
Carolyn, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, we lost you there for a half sec.
Yeah, I don't know what that was.
Okay.
If it was a big operation, I'd get two Tootsie Rolls, and I could eat while helping him do anything. And... it was no problem, but then later, about, you know, when I was a teenager, it started bothering me, and it ended up being just, you know, this comical and yet horrible problem to try to help him run that office and stay upright.
So now then you got that phone call, and you have to help out, you have to help your dad out. What were the first days like being back there and pitching in?
Oh, it was a nightmare. I mean, you know, one, my mama had never missed a day's work in 40 years, so we couldn't face that no matter what she had. You know, we figured we'd give her a day to get well, and since it was a heart attack, okay, we'll give her 2 days at work days, and then the weekend. And so 4 days, it sounds absurd, but my father and I were sure that she was just going to spring up out of the hospital and come back to work, and that's what everybody wanted, including her. And it just didn't happen. You know, she's fine now. But she never did get well enough to come back to work. And so I thought, you know, it was going to be for 2 days. And I kept checking my watch every 15 minutes. It just stayed one more day.
Yeah. Now, what was the year when you returned home and the heart in the right place takes place over the course of a year? So yeah. What was the year when you first went back?
To help protect the patient's privacy. I don't like to say what year. It's recently, though.
Recently.
Yeah.
And since then, since writing the book, your dad's retired.
Yeah, he's 77 now. Mom is 81.
Wow.
And he worked for 40 years.
Wow. Was it hard for him to retire, or was it time?
He had no intention of retiring. Everybody thought he'd just work till he dropped over. But he got to having heart trouble himself.
Yeah.
And started dropping over in the office. And whenever he did that, if he'd walk in a patient's room and faint, they thought it was because they had something terrible, you know, and that he couldn't face telling them what was wrong. So it was really stressful to the patients. And he was happy to keep working while fainting, but, you know, because I'd done it for years. So we thought, no problem. But then eventually he couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah. When you first arrived because of your mom's heart attack, did you have any inkling that you were going to see your parents in a new light?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No, I'm just like everybody else. Their parents think they're a child, and you still think your parents are young. And so it took forever. In fact, never did my parents ever start seeing me as an adult. And that was one of the shocking things about it, that I'd been a big geek when I was in the area before with braces and the big thick glasses and orthopedic shoes and making real high grades. And then when I went away, they had no idea what happened. So it's like I'd been abducted by aliens and then just dropped back. And when I dropped back, I was spoiled and used to being a big deal from working at the Senate. But as far as everybody else knew, I was still just a nerd. So I dropped back not only into being a kid working for my father, but around patients who'd known me since I was a baby and people I'd gone to school with. So it was horrible. Like overnight, I got stripped of all that, you know, prestige and glamour that I'd had.
Yeah.
That I thought was inherent in me, so that was sort of funny, you know, finding out that it wasn't just me that was just inherently impressive no matter where I was or what I had on.
Mm. Well, how did your appreciation of your parents, your dad in particular, and how important he was to the community, how did that change over time for you?
When you grow up in an environment, you don't question if there's anything unusual about it. And I knew he had to handle a lot of stuff, but I didn't realize, you know, as an adult, to be back there and actually be present with somebody having to handle emergencies that ought to go to the emergency room, but the people weren't going to make it to get to the emergency room. And he had none of the really fancy equipment like you see on TV. So, you know, with tape and Band-Aids and, you know, aspirin, he's treating people who are bleeding to death or dying from various ailments, and there's nobody else there to fix it. And that was amazing to me, to realize that he'd been doing that 7 days a week for 40 years.
Has someone else stepped into the practice?
Yeah, thank goodness that a local guy who's grown up in the area was ready to come back out and work, and so he's out there now.
Hmm.
That's nice.
Yeah.
But he can't, you know, Daddy was grandfathered in on a whole lot of stuff, and did a lot of what other people would think was an unorthodox practice, like using, there's a famous story in the book of using pliers on somebody when he absolutely had to, and I think the new doctor probably wouldn't use pliers.
Yeah.
But, he's a new guy and he's good, so people aren't completely left high and dry.
Yeah. Now, what's your life like today?
Now that Dad retired, I have got a new job working inside the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, and I'm a writer for them.
Terrific.
I love it.
Yeah. Carolyn, we got to go. Thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Carolyn Jordan is the author of Heart in the Right Place, a memoir. The book is published by Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill. And if you're looking for a Valentine's Day gift for somebody special, this might be it. Heart in the Right Place, the publisher, Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill.